This podcast is brought to you by IFR Magazine. This is Jeff Van West of IFR Magazine and AvWeb. I'm talking with Max Trescott, the 2008 Flight Instructor of the Year and author of Max Trescott's G1000 Glass Cockpit Handbook. How are you doing today, Max?
I'm excellent, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well. You have a lot of experience training a lot of different pilots with the G1000 system, and you've been doing it through a number of different iterations of the system, so you've seen it evolve. I'm wondering, just as a global view, what do you find is the most difficult thing for pilots coming into a glass cockpit from a traditional six-pack?
Sure. I think that most pilots adapt pretty quickly to the PFD, that is the TV channel number one, if you will. It sits right there in front of the pilot that has all the traditional instruments displayed on it. I find that maybe about 5% of the pilots will initially misinterpret the airspeed indicator. They'll somehow think that since the larger numbers are higher up on the scale, that they should just pull back and point at those larger numbers, and that will speed up the aircraft. But most people don't have any problem adjusting to the instruments. And then the only challenge usually becomes the understanding the autopilot and the organization of the 25 or so pages that are buried in the MFD, which I like to call TV channel 2. That's like cable TV where all the good stuff is.
Well, I'm wondering, what can a pilot do as they're learning and then even further as they become an expert to maximize the usefulness of the system while minimizing the level of distraction?
Boy, that's an outstanding question, and I think that's probably one of the single biggest issues that people face when flying these systems. And so I always coach people that they should always be thinking about, what's the most important information that they need to display for the particular situation they're in at that moment. So, for example, if it's nighttime, well, heck, they definitely ought to be displaying the terrain because, otherwise they may not be able to see the rocks out the window. In a high-density metro area, boy, you definitely want to have the traffic displayed on its own separate screen so that you can clearly separate it out from all the background clutter that you might see on the screen. And I also encourage them to use the autopilot. What the autopilot does is it really frees the brain up to think about the more important things. So I'm sure you know what it's like flying in the clouds with no autopilot. Fully 50% of your brain cycles are focused on keep the wings level, I don't want to die. Well, if you put the autopilot on, now you have virtually all those brain cycles available to think about even more important things like, hey, has the weather changed at my destination? Should I consider diverting now? Have the winds changed? Do I need additional fuel stop? All these kinds of things, I think, are some of the benefits we get from flying glass cockpit aircraft.
Well, let's build on that a little bit, because a common issue that they'll be flying along, especially if they're learning something new about the system, this seemed to be very common when WASP upgrades were coming out. People expected the plane to do something, maybe fly a procedure turn, something new that it couldn't do before. They were on autopilot, and then the plane didn't do what they expected it to do for one reason or another. The most common thing that people do is turn off the autopilot. Now, what's your take on that? Is that the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do? How do you deal with people when they run into the situation, gosh, what's it doing now? What's your recommendation?
I think actually disconnecting is often the best quick solution to keep the airplane from heading off in the wrong direction. And there have been a lot of changes that have come out with WASP, and so the classic ways that we're used to figuring out what the plane is going to do next no longer apply.
What would you say some of those differences are in a nutshell, if you had to give me the elevator spiel on what to watch out for if going from a non-WASP G1000 to a WASP G1000?
Some of the biggest changes were certainly related to holding patterns. It used to be in the non-WASP GPSs that the airplane could not fly an entire holding pattern. And it also was quirky in the sense that for some holding patterns, it could make the initial turn correctly into the holding pattern, but for others, it wouldn't. My recollection is that for procedure turns, it could make the turn outbound, and that was it. But if there was a racetrack depicted, well, it couldn't make any of the turns. And the way you could always tell what it was going to do next was by inspecting the flight plan and looking at what the DTK, the desired course, that was next to the waypoint. So if it said hold 144 degrees, you knew that airplane was going to turn to 144 degrees when it hit the holding waypoint. With the new WASP systems, it may still say 144, but it may turn outbound to the reciprocal of that heading. So you can no longer reliably tell just by looking at the DTK what it's going to do next. But the good news is these WASP-capable systems know how to fly the entire hold, so it doesn't really matter. You don't have to be checking up on ahead of time because it's going to do the right thing.
What are your favorite G1000 tips or tricks that you like to tell people about?
Sure. I would say that, that probably the number one tip, it's not a trick, but it's a tip, is that every time you push a button on the autopilot, you absolutely have to look at the annunciators and verify that you've got the mode that you think you selected. And the reason is sometimes buttons will have two functions. You know, if you push it once, you get heading mode. If you push it twice, you get roll mode, you know, for example. So you never know when you push a button exactly which mode you're going to come up with, particularly if the key bounces, you know, as you push it and you end up with two pushes. So I think some of the biggest automation surprises come from people, you know, laboring under the assumption that, oh, well, the autopilot is in this mode that I think I set it for, but in fact it's doing something different because you didn't verify, you know, what it was in.
Are there any other sort of common traps that you see people fall into, because you have an opportunity to see a lot of them?
For airplanes with the integrated autopilot, the biggest mistake that I see people make with that is that they'll be under the assumption that the autopilot is on and operating because they have the flight director on, but they haven't actually engaged the autopilot. And so it seems like virtually every person I fly with, at some point, they'll be hands off the controls, the airplane's kind of sinking and turning, and they'll go, why is it doing that? And I'll say, who's flying the airplane? And they'll always point at the command monitor and say, the autopilot. And I'll point to the little place up top where, you know, it says AP, and I says, that's funny that, you know, the AP is not showing. So I think people have a hard time differentiating in their mind the difference between the flight director and the autopilot.
Are there things that you've seen in other systems that you really liked that, you know, aren't common in the sort of standard G1000 system, or things that you don't like about the G1000 that you wish were put into it?
Yeah, I actually spend literally 100% of my time flying glass aircraft of one type or another, almost never in a round gauge aircraft anymore. But I'm almost always in G1000 and Avedon. I have not flown the Chelton system. I think that I continue to see really nice features evolving into both Avedon and the G1000, things which you know, people aren't always aware of. So, for example, one of my favorite little features, which has crept into both systems over the last year or two, is the what they call the current track bug, which is essentially a visual representation of a TRK, which is your ground track. And that is in the G1000. It's a little tiny magenta diamond that's usually hidden underneath the heading box at the top of the HSI, and on the Avedon system, it's a little white triangle, which is in the same location, top of the HSI, though it's connected by a white dashed line down to the center of the HSI. And the beauty of that little thing is that whenever you turn the aircraft in a direction that's going to align that diamond or that triangle with the top of the CDI needle, you have absolutely perfectly compensated for the crosswind at that point, and you are now paralleling your course. So it makes it really easy anytime you want to navigate to simply position the aircraft so that that little diamond or a triangle is halfway between the CDI needle and the D-bar, which of course shows you where the course is. And you just basically steer to always keep the diamond between those two. And when you happen to be exactly on course, you just line it up with the head of the CDI needle. And it is amazing how much it simplifies instrument flying.
What are your thoughts on the highway in the sky? You mentioned the Cirrus Perspective. Have you gotten much time to mess around with that system and see it in practice enough to generate an opinion?
I have. And in my opinion, actually, is a little bit different from some of the owners. I find a lot of the owners absolutely love all the different aspects of synthetic vision. And I think that the one aspect that I find, for me personally, that I just don't particularly warm up to, is the highway in the sky, the shoot through the boxes, if you will. And it was intriguing. I actually ran into somebody who used to work at NASA, who had worked with a gentleman who actually developed that concept back in the early 90s when they were developing the SATS program. And he told me what they discovered is that using those boxes allow you to fly an extremely precise path. However, it requires a lot more work to do it. And so maybe that's why I just haven't warmed up to it, because indeed it seems like more work for a very small, negligible gain.
Makes sense to me. Are there any other sort of G1000 tales that you'd like to share? Any great stories along the way?
Well, people sometimes ask, what kind of different accidents are happening now in G1000 aircraft? And I can tell you that all the same stupid things that people used to do in round cage airplanes are still happening in G1000 aircraft. We've had a couple instances of G1000s having controlled flight into terrain, one into Southern California, one into to Nevada. You know, there you had a system which had all the information in the world available in both cases to extremely high-time pilots, but they just didn't focus on choosing to display the information that they knew at that point in time, which was the terrain. So the G1000 is a fabulous system, and I would strongly encourage anybody listening to this to get checked out into a glass cockpit, whether it's a, you know, a Cirrus or a G1000-based aircraft. I think what they're going to find is that these are incredibly capable systems. They make flying a heck of a lot of fun. Your situational awareness is just phenomenal. You're never in any doubt as to where the rocks are at any point in time. And knowing that not only you know, gives you great peace of mind, but helps keep your mind in one piece as well.
Thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to us today, Max. If anyone wants to read Max's blog or order his book or see his videos online, you can check out his website at maxtrescott.com. That's maxtrescott.com. Or his phone, 800-247-6553. Again, thanks a lot, Max. Hope you have a good day.
Thanks, Jeff. Fun talking to you as always.
This podcast has been brought to you by IFR Magazine. For more on IFR, log on to www.ifr-magazine.com.